Would you introduce yourself, please?
I'm Amanda Palmer.
I knew you were going to do that. If you left out the I'd have to go into Pro Tools and put it in from something else you said.
It often depends on the day and my current attitude towards the world. Sometimes I just decide to be Amanda Palmer, but some days I'm Amanda Palmer, no questions asked.
Tell me about the Eclectic Society in 30 words or less.
The Eclectic Society was the rambling old house that I lived in college, where I hoped to find a bohemian punk rock artistic community, but just wound up, I think, feeling isolated amongst another bunch of isolated people who were all hoping to feel like they were part of the same bohemian society. But I was a really miserable college student. I had a really hard time connecting, and an eclectic kind of was a storied and historic because my older stepbrother, who I worshipped like a god, who played bass and was a painter and was just sort of like the source of all coolness, he had lived there because he went to the same college. So I just assumed if I could get into that college and live in that house.
So what do they call it, an animal house? You were a, what do they have? There's a name for it when you're like, you know, you're connected to something. I forget what it is, but there's some connection. When you're with fraternities in Animal House, they made fun of it, right?
Yeah, it's eclectic was kind of the anti-fraternity. Right. And in fact, the hazing process was backwards. The initiates would haze the pre-existing members and stuff like that. But it was college was kind of a dark, messy blur for me.
As opposed to the rest of life.
The rest of life, I actually have had at least since college. I've been able to blaze my own path, and I've had a lot more control over things. So I think the thing that drove me nuts about college is I just felt like I was out of control.
But, you know, it's funny, because I looked at the Eclectic Society and Blue Man Group and MGMT and an actor from Lost in Space. So it's a pretty good mix, even though you were miserable. And it probably got into your head in some way, shape, or form. So how much money do you make busking as a person who doesn't move? I mean, and you did it in multiple, and you, from moment one, the woman who had no idea that you were going to be this social media guru, you didn't just busk in one place. You took your busking and your act to multiple markets, right? So you kind of were doing social media from moment one.
If you could call street performance social media, I think the term social media is really strange. Social media is like, it's just connecting.
Right.
And connecting has always happened, and it's always, and artists have always jumped on new means of connections, whether it's artistic genres or ways to communicate or ways to paint, ways to express feelings and ideas. Artists will use them, and always have, and use them creatively. And I think you're seeing the same thing today with the tools of the internet. I mean, sure, you can use them for business and marketing and just getting like facts and stuff out, but you can also use them to just connect with people, which is what attracts me to it. And the street performing, I think if anything, laid the basis more for the idea that I think that created my entire philosophy is that you should make yourself available and you should make it very possible for people to help and reward and support you instead of hoarding your art behind a locked door. And as a street performer, that's sort of like the ultimate left of the dial. Like you literally are just out there playing for the entire world, you know, doing your craft, strumming your instrument, performing your performance with a box. And those who appreciate it and like it will throw you a dollar, and those who give no shit will walk by. But a lot, you know, it really builds a certain kind of mentality, which is it's you and the world in collaboration, and there's enough trust and faith that the system can sort of work and happen.
This is to me kind of an interesting thing that people spend way too much time on with you, which is trying to categorize. Is this woman an artist? Is this woman a performer? Is this woman, you know, a blank media guru? You know, why did she embrace and all of that? And I don't know about other people like me, but way before this all happened, I saw the Dresden Dolls and realized that what someone was trying to do was to combine a whole bunch of different artistic prophecies and not only make art, but make good music. All of the music has been exceptionally well crafted, well written, well thought out music. And isn't that kind of the point at the end of the rainbow, so to speak?
No, I don't think so. I mean, of course you want to make good music and you want to share good music. But to me, the point of the end of the rainbow is where if you make music that connects with people and that makes people feel and that they love and understand and appreciate, you've then forged a connection with that person. That to me is the end of the rainbow. That's like the music is the rainbow, but the pot of gold is the moment where you are looking into another person's eyes and they're saying this, I got this. I understand this. You and I share something, and you go, yeah, we do.
I, for better or for worse, I read every 12th Lefsetz letter. So I open up this thing and I read about the whole, you know, I don't even know where the word kerfuffle came from. Was that you? So you invented, so that's great. So he uses that, which is even better, that he picked up your language and couldn't create his own language. So I'm not going to take any side here. I'm going to be smack dab in the middle. But as it's played out, and as I read your latest, you know, message about saying, okay, well, you know what? We'll give him some money. So when you look back on this particular moment in amongst all the other moments, and there have been a lot of moments, and that's part of being an artist, when you look back on that 10 years from now, what do you think you're going to think? Are you gonna, is it even gonna rate as a big one in the level of artistic notions of things that have happened?
Well, my philosophy on everything has not changed. And paying the musicians was a really easy solution to make a lot of upset people not upset. And none of these musicians are gonna complain about being paid at all. By the same token, none of these musicians would have been upset to not be paid. They weren't the ones complaining. The musicians were, they had volunteered their time. I've been talking to all of them backstage at all of these shows, and none of them understand what the big deal is. And, you know, there's been a lot of questions coming up about what this all means. And mostly, you know, musicians and artists in general don't usually like feeling babysat and, you know, patronized. And a lot of this felt, I think, on the part of the musicians, felt a little patronizing, sort of like, you know, the giant hand needs to come and protect you because this evil chick is trying to screw you. And all these musicians are going, no, you've got that one wrong. But I think it sort of is, I mean, I really was happy when I ran into Emily White from NPR, and I could see myself and her situation, because she sort of became a human target in a cultural argument. I kind of feel like a human target in a cultural argument. You know, people, and anyone who's bashing me doesn't know me. None of the people who are bashing me are people who really know me, my touring philosophy, my shows, my crew, my history well. They're people who have come in from the outside, think they know what's going on and don't, and are kind of imposing theoretical arguments on a very real practical thing that's already working. And, you know, I think the thing that may come out of this is that, you know, I was talking to Neil about this. Crowdfunding is brand new. It definitely makes a lot of people uncomfortable. All of a sudden, artists handling money is making people really uncomfortable. And it seems to be making people angry. And a lot of the journalism about this controversy has been about the fact that, you know, nothing's changed. I mean, budgets are always budgets, but they haven't been transparent up until now. I'm sharing my bank balance and my financial choices with the world, which means that people in the world who don't agree with them can come in with pitchforks when they don't agree with my decisions. And I think that's just going to be kind of a new slippery slope for artists to have to navigate as they're running the show. But I would so much fucking prefer that the artists be running the show than being beholden to the labels, beholden to all the middlemen, beholden to the people who are... My fucking record label used to tell me that it was against company policy for them to tell me and my band what their marketing budget was on our own record and what they were spending the money on. And I would sort of be mystified going like, but you guys, we can help you. We can tell you what you're wasting money on because we know our fans. And they literally wanted to keep all that information in a locked box, not just from the public, but from us. And so here I am in a whole new vanguard and generation of artists who are like, tell you what we're doing. If you're going to help us and give us money, we'll tell you what we're spending it on. We're going to tell you what we, you know, and where we're going to crowdsource things and where we're going to try and get it from free and so on and so forth. But, you know, anytime you see a sea change like that, there's going to be a tidal wave of confusion. And I think that's the main thing.
Yeah, the people with the money are the people that are scared now. The people who are in control of the record companies are scared because if the artist can take control, then, what do we do for a living?
Well, and even more terrifying, the fans can take control. I mean, the public, the people. That's like, I know, really.
Oh my gosh, the people that they're serving actually getting a choice? No, that can't happen.
But, I mean, this is the way that I've been, the way that I've been conducting my entire life in business for years has been a collaboration between me, my band, and the fans, and trying to make something that everyone can enjoy. And we've really tried hard never to rely on not just the man and the labels, but outside opinion. And it's like, you know, if it works for us, it works for us. And it's always a fun experiment. And this is sort of the first time that the sort of world at large has come into to system. And it's definitely like it's been like a jolt to the system, an emotional jolt to the system.
But I mean, all kidding aside, you're running the business really well. You're having the $5,000 house parties, which is very brave because you don't know what venue you're going to walk into for that 5K. But that's the whole point of it, is it not?
Yeah, that's the fun part. I mean, it's real. And I sometimes have a more fulfilling experience playing in someone's living room to 50 people than playing in the Fillmore to 1500, just because it feels really totally unique. And, you know, you get to actually feel somebody's home, you know, instead of feeling like you're just a band on a treadmill in a factory.
A lot of big artists now are doing house shows. It's become the new thing to a certain extent.
Well, the internet has made it possible. It's made it possible to set it all up.
The video for Want It Back, pretty amazing. Watched it this morning, wasn't at the office, in my own. But not only is that, I don't want to use groundbreaking, because everything, we could turn around and say everything Amanda Palmer does has been groundbreaking. But that was a lot, but the thing I want to get at is that was a lot of work. That's what, 3 days worth of stuff?
Well, 3 days of posing for the camera,
right.
But then
getting all the posts.
And Jim Batt, the filmmaker who created it, is really a visionary and a incredibly hardworking guy and brilliant director. The way he was able to collaborate with me to make last minute changes and to deal with schedules, and I mean, the guy was just a genius.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich, and it's two of your songs as the bread. And songs by anybody else you want to play in between.